Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Titans in action tonight on Thursday Night Football against the Pittsburgh Steelers, but the Predators also in action tonight against the Seattle Kraken on the road. And joining us now to break it all down is Elliot Friedman of the 32 Thoughts podcast and of Sportsnet. Elliot, always appreciate your time. There's been a lot going on in the hockey world. I want to break that all down with you. But first, I want to focus on here locally. The Predators have been, I think, you know, maybe the poster children for inconsistency. Win a couple, lose a couple, look great in a couple, look not so great in a couple. What do you think is the key to finding consistency? Is it just time?
Well, I think there is that. Like, don't forget, you guys have made some pretty seismic changes on your group, including, you know, the insertion of Ryan O'Reilly, although there's nothing bad at all about that. You know, Luke Shen was supposed to play a big role on your team. He got hurt. You know, Burnett is trying to change the way you guys play a little bit. Some of the younger players are going to get bigger roles. Like, I think the hardest thing in any sport is being good every night. Number one, it's just not possible. And number two, the key is to get there as much as you can. And when you've got young players and you've got people getting used to each other, yes, I do think it takes time. I've seen a lot of like Carolyn about Nashville so far this season. I think they're you can see they've taken a. There were times last year I really thought they sagged, and I haven't seen too much of that this year. I mean, you have bad games here and there, but
right.
I mean, look, they're the last team to beat the Rangers. They did it on the road. That was a nice win over Toronto last weekend. I see a lot to like. I just obviously think you're not there yet.
Elliot Friedman is with us. You know, and we're looking at the schedule and the standings. You know, every time we talk about the standings, we can always couch it by saying, well, you know, it's early. There's a lot of season left. And that's so true. I mean, we're in the beginning of November. I don't think you can be, you know, scouring the standings after every single game. But in your opinion, when is the time that you need to buckle in? When is it no longer too early to be paying attention or too close attention to the standings?
Well, I think that's a great question because I think the NHL is different than a lot of the other leagues when it comes to this. And the reason is the loser point. Now, the league, people in the league have told me they hate it when I call it that, but that's what I call it, the loser point. And so, Carolyn, I keep a stat. And I go to November 1st. At the end of games on November 1st, which was yesterday, and I've done this for about 15 years now. If you are four or more points out of the playoffs on November 1st, you make the playoffs somewhere between 10 and 15% of the time. So, like, I'm not a panicker by nature. I agree with you. Look, a lot of teams still have, you know, somewhere between 70 and 72 games, sometimes even 73 or 74 games to go. So it's ridiculous to write them off this early. But the history of this league indicates to you that because of the loser point, where if you get into overtime, you get one, it's very difficult to fall far behind and catch up. And if you look at it at American Thanksgiving, your Thanksgiving, and the number's even higher. It's like, basically, if you're in a playoff spot at Thanksgiving, you kind of make it like 87% of the time. There are people who keeps track of this. So, like, you guys are not one of the four teams that's 4 points are out today. That's Pittsburgh, Edmonton, Calgary, and San Jose. So you're not in that, like, red alert zone or anything like that. But this is a league where you cannot afford to fall behind too far because of that loser point.
So, Elliot, what you're saying is we need to revisit this right around Thanksgiving, which is, what, 3 weeks from now? And then
yes.
We can get a better assessment of not just where – the, you know, the league is at, but where this Nashville Predator team is at. Such a young team mixed with some really good veterans, a new head coach, new GM. So this is right around that Thanksgiving time is the time that we need to really focus in and say, okay, now we got a better assessment of where this team can be or where this team is.
I think that's fair, Derek. I do think that. And I think the other thing, too, is Like, I think you guys are the only team this year that's made two waiver claims. So that says to me that, you know, Barry Trotz is still tinkering around with what he's got and what he thinks he can have. So that says to me there's still opportunities in the lineup for talented young players to find a spot. So I think when you're claiming people on waivers early, it says to me that there's stuff out there that still interests you and that your roster isn't settled yet. And so that says to me the Predators still think they've got a bit of a way to go.
Now, Elliot, how do, because, you know, when you reach, and we had Ryan McDonough on early this week, and we talked about him, you know, in his game, but then talked about Ryan yep. O'Reilly in his 1,000th game that he's played yep. in. Certain milestones mean certain things to certain individuals, but what does that mean to the whole NHL, other guys that are looking at a guy like Ryan O'Reilly?
You know, I first of all, I think that's a great question. You know, for 1,000 games, you know, basically, like, you know how tough that game is. Think about it. If you were not going to miss a game, that's 12 and a half seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think about how long it takes all these guys to get there. Like, it's a hard thing to do. It says to me that you've been able to stay relatively healthy, and it says to me that you're a really good player. Like, if you play, like, I'm a big believer, honestly, Derek, if you play one game in the NHL, you're a great player. Like, 1% of the people who start playing hockey make the NHL. So if you play one game, you're a great player. But if you play 1,000, you're an incredible player, and people really see value in you. You know, the thing about Ryan O'Reilly is he's done it as much with his brains as he has with his physical gifts. I think also he's very committed. Like McDonough and O'Reilly are kind of cut out from the same cloth. Like, they're talented people, but they've made it because of how much they work and how much they take care of themselves and how demanding they are of themselves and others as much as anything else. And, you know, I'll tell you this. I've known some players who got to, like, 990 or 996, and there's nothing to be ashamed of playing 990 or 996 games. But, you know, you don't bring up 1,000 around them because it hurts that they just missed.
Now, you had on your 32 Thoughts podcast one of the, and I can't pronounce his last, is it Bierner from the Kraken? Matty Bierner. You had him on your podcast not too long ago talking about, you know, discussing their rise. You know, you got a team that's just coming in the league, an expansion team, and all of a sudden they start to, you know, win some games. What did you learn from him, and how did this rise occur with this team in regards to them starting to win games?
First of all, Derek, I can't believe you listen to that garbage. I'm very impressed.
Hey, I gotta listen to some things. You know, when you come on, I gotta have some things that I listen to.
D-Bay's doing his homework.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Derek. You know, I'll say this about them. In their first year, they were really plotting. Like Derek, honestly, like, it was like a 1970s offense, mm-hmm. right? In football, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Like, that's what they were. And, you know, they realized they had to get faster, and they had to get a little more dangerous. And Bierner's really helped that. They don't have a lot of players like him. Like, he's one of the youngest players on their team, but he's one of the most skilled players on that team. He's a very creative guy. And I think that's what they did last year. Like, they don't have, like, a dominant line or anything like that. They kind of come at you in waves. But the thing that in this league, as much as defense is important, it sounds stupid, but you can't win if you can't score. And in their first year, the Kraken couldn't score. Last year at 5-on-5, they were the best scoring team in the league. They come at you in waves. They check you hard. But they really improved their offense. Their gamble they took with Tolvanen, you know, the guy, your guy from Nashville, mm-hmm. they only played him 11 or 12 minutes a night, but they found a role for him, an offensive role. And I think that's what they did really well. They went out of their way to try to find scorers who were maybe flawed players in other ways, but they could score. And that was a big part of who they were. But they've got great structure. Everybody is where they're supposed to be, and they usually don't beat themselves.
Elliot Friedman of the 32 Thoughts podcast and of Sportsnet is with us. We called him wheeling and dealing David Poile. I think maybe we can call Barry waiver claiming Barry Trotz with some of the waiver claims that he's put in. But have you heard any, you know, potential trade buzz coming out of Nashville?
I haven't heard a lot. You know, as earlier in the year, I mentioned to you, I heard Garland's name from Vancouver, and then I threw cold water on that. Like, you know, Shen's injury kind of, you needed some of your D, and then I heard that I wasn't so convinced that Nashville wanted to do that anyway. I haven't heard a ton about the Predators, but like I said, you know, by claiming the two young players on waivers, Trotz has indicated that he's interested in trying things. I think the other thing, too, is, like, you guys have some flexibility, right? So you guys can do some things to help others. But I know that one of the teams that's most eager to make moves is Vancouver, but they don't want to have to toss in, like, a sweetener, like a draft pick or a prospect to get a deal done. So unless you're willing to make a hockey deal with them, I don't know that there's a fit.
Interesting. Now, looking a little bit big picture, we saw a horrific tragedy last week the Elite Ice Hockey League in the UK with Adam Johnson. I know that the WHL has now required that all players wear protective neck gear. What has the conversation been in the NHL, and can you see maybe some similar mandates and rules be enacted in the NHL?
Well, the first thing, Carolyn, is that we have to, I should explain the way it works in the NHL. Like, the league can't just say, okay, everybody put on neck guards. And when it comes to equipment that players wear, the players have a say. Like, when helmets came in, it was put in a way that if you were an existing player, you didn't have to wear them. When visors came in, same thing. If you were an existing player, you didn't have to wear them. But eventually everybody did. So the hockey way has always kind of been, make it mandatory at some of the lower levels so that people get used to it. Because there's three junior leagues in Canada, Ontario, Quebec, and the West. And the West was the only one that didn't have it mandatory. The other two did. Now they do. In the American Hockey League, where you guys have the team in Milwaukee, actually, the players don't have the same power. So last summer, actually, at the NHL's request, the AHL made it mandatory that players had to wear cut-resistant socks and wrist guards. Now, the thing I've noticed about this is, after that injury last weekend, there is definitely a lot of NHL players. Like, if you look now, like, Eric Karlsson's wearing it in Pittsburgh. Tom Wilson today of Washington, one of the league's toughest players, he was wearing it in practice. And we're starting to see some more players skate with them. So I think eventually this will get worked out. But you know, it's going to be a bit of a slower process. I do get a sense, though, that the players, Carolyn, are saying, we should lead on this one because kids do what we do. And I think there are players who do have that feeling. The biggest problem, Carolyn, is that there still isn't a lot of supply of these neck guards. Like, a lot of them, you have to buy them and sew them in. There aren't their own kind of standalone product, although I've been told that's changing. I learned a lot more about this than I ever thought I would. Apparently, there's about 15 kinds of cut-resistant socks, and there's about 10 kinds of cut-resistant wrist guards, but there's only about 3 kinds of cut-resistant neckwear, and people usually order them before the season. They're not so in stock right now. Like, I had an equipment manufacturer say to me the other day, I've never seen anything like this before. We're getting an order online every 20 seconds. So the good news is that people are seeing this, including NHL players, and saying, you know what, we'd better wear the protection. The bad news is I just don't think there's a lot of supply yet, and now they're working on how do we fix that. I think the other thing I'd say, just to anybody out here who plays hockey in the Nashville area, and I know your kids' leagues and your men's leagues and your women's leagues and your fun leagues are thriving, wear it. I know one thing the players have said to me in the last few days is, in the last 5 years, the quality of these neck guards has really improved. They used to be really uncomfortable or really hot. Now, first of all, that's no longer a good enough excuse, but the quality of the stuff has improved. In the NHL right now, if, God forbid, somebody gets cut, the trainers know what to do, the doctors know what to do, they're all right there, and you can't have a game unless there's, you know, at least an ambulance at the arena. Like, if it ever happens in an NHL game, they are so fast. Like with Evander Kane last year, those trainers and doctors and EMTs, they know exactly what to do. They're so good, it's like clockwork. If this happens to you at, say, some rink in Nashville where you play, chances are there's not going to be that infrastructure there to help you out. So if you're like a recreational hockey player or a youth hockey player or whatever in the Nashville area, put this stuff on because, you know, God forbid you get cut, there's not going to be the infrastructure there to help you.
So you can see more guys wearing this next season or toward the latter part of the season than you see now, basically because of the demand and there's not enough supply at this point.
Yes, I think you'll like TJ Oshie of Washington owns a company that makes this stuff, and he said that he's sold out. Like he's on back order now. So the moment these things become available, I think you're going to see more and more players wearing them, and eventually I think there will be a move to mandate them at some point.
Devastating that something so tragic had to happen in order to, you know, to kind of enact this kind of change, but also admirable of NHL players to know the impact that they have in every single level of the game. But in another scenario, much less tragic, another scenario of learning by example is Shane Pinto. Of course, we learned that he'll be suspended for 41 games. And when you were with us last week, you mentioned that it was a third party that was using his account, and that's what he got busted for. What's the latest on that? And we're hearing that there are some NHL players coming forward asking questions of, is what I'm doing okay? Am I in the right? Am I in the wrong? What's kind of been the latest with the Shane Pinto situation and gambling in the NHL as a whole?
Well, I think that one of the things that I think has definitely happened, Carolyn, is that there were a lot of players either phoning their agents or asking their teams, like the general manager or the Players Association, what exactly do I have to know here? Like, I had a couple call me, like, say, what do you know? Like, just tell me what you know, because, like, you know, believe it or not, I'm sure you guys believe it, but I'm sure people might be surprised. There's a lot of players across all sports who legally gamble on things. They all have bet. A lot of them have, I shouldn't say all, but a lot of them have betting accounts. A lot of them play fantasy football or Masters pools like we all do. And they were all trying to figure out what exactly occurred. Like, I know the Players Association set up some Zoom calls for players to get on this week to say, okay, you need to talk about this. And, you know, the one thing I think, Carolyn, is it was more than one thing. I believe that now. It was more than one thing. But, you know, one of the things they kind of talked about was, they told players, and this doesn't necessarily mean that Pinto was guilty of these things, but these were the kinds of things that they told players about. You know, don't share your betting account. Like, if you have it, it's only for you. Don't give it to anyone else. Don't bet on hockey in any way, whether it's a game or even a prop bet. If a friend calls you and says, hey, you know, just use an example, Ryan McDonagh, you're plus 350 to score a goal tonight. What do you think? Don't laugh or joke with them. Like, call them, tell them never to do that again. And if they can't handle that, like, just cut them out of your life. Don't share any insider injury information. And don't bet illegally, like using a bookmaker or anything like that. Like it seems like kind of common sense, but maybe sometimes people need a refresher. Like, the fun stuff that we all do, like fantasy football and legal wagering, there was no problem with any of that. I think the issue was that it got into some gray areas and his friends took advantage of him a bit, and that's where the trouble was.
Yeah, and that's a shame. And I think that we've seen it here, at least in Tennessee, when sports gambling became legal, what, 3 years ago now? Yeah. It's become so ingrained into just everyday sports life.
It's normal now.
It's so normal, whereas even just 5 years ago, it was taboo. You couldn't even mention a spread or placing a bet. I mean, now it's plastered all over networks across the country. It's crazy how things have changed so drastically. And now that we're seeing it kind of come to fruition in every league in America. But Elliott Friedman.
Yeah, that's totally true. The only people who could mention it were Brett Musburger and Al Michaels, and they had to do it in code, so we all understood.
Yeah, exactly. They were the only ones that were excused. But Elliott Friedman of the 32 Thoughts podcast and the Sportsnet. Elliott, always appreciate your insight. Thank you for stopping by. We'll chat with you next week.
All right, guys. Have yourselves a great weekend. Enjoy.
Yep, you do decide.
Are you watching the Titans tonight, Elliott?
Of course. I work in Toronto, Boston, but I'll have an eye. I love Derrick Henry. Like, when I was a kid, I loved Earl Campbell. I like big, strong running backs, so I'm a big Derrick Henry guy.
All right. And I think he's a big fan of you, too.
I'm big fan. Like, who's that? That's nice of you to say.
All right. Thanks, Elliott. Have a good rest of your week.
Take care, guys.
Yep.
Elliott Friedman, he is the very best. All right, coming up next, we mentioned it, Titans and Steelers tonight on Thursday Night Football. We'll give our official predictions and final thoughts on this game coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.